Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. Thanks for being part of my day. Welcome aboard. If you just tuned in, you've been listening already, we consider that a sign of high intelligence, and you're going to get smarter because Kenneth Davis is with us. Kenneth is the author of the Don't Know Much About series of books, and which is ironic because he actually knows a lot about these things. But, of course, the classic is Don't Know Much About History. He's written a number of others, and I think I have all of them, which I'm very proud to say. Don't Know Much About Mythology, and on, several of the others. But we're going to talk about history today, especially as we prepare for our nation's, the United States, independence celebration of our Independence Day. Kenneth Davis, welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Always a pleasure to be with you.
It's good to have you, Ken. Thank you for being with us on yet another holiday as we talk a little bit about history. There are a few more wonderful stories, and I know it's sort of expected for me as an American, as someone who is patriotic, to think that the story of the independence of the United States would be pretty special. But I think in history, I think it's fair to say that the story of the birth of America and the whole situation with all the founders and the framers and the founders of our nation, the framers of our Constitution, all the heroic things, the humanity, all the failures, all the weaknesses of all these guys, and yet they managed to pull it out and to give us this great nation we have. It's a wonderful story, isn't it, Ken?
It is a wonderful story, and I'm glad you said that as you did, because, you know, we tend to think that there's Washington and Franklin and Adams and Jefferson, and we have these marble statues, and we see their unsmiling faces on our dollar bills and our currency, but we don't see them as real people. But they were men, and they had flaws, and they had egos and ambitions, and that makes their accomplishments all the more remarkable, it seems to me. And
most of them were very young men. I mean, a lot of people would be surprised to learn that Jefferson was in his early 30s when he wrote the Declaration.
32 at the time he wrote the Declaration, absolutely.
Yeah.
And certainly one of the younger men.
I have clothes older than that, Ken. that I still wear sometimes.
the first thing we should point out, it's sort of a more of a curiosity than a shocking fact, is that we should actually have celebrated this yesterday. That was the mm-hmm. date on which the Congress actually voted on a resolution in favor of independence. It was put forth by Richard Henry Lee of Virginia. Congress voted on it. John Adams wrote back to his lovely wife Abigail that very day. This is a day that will go down in history. We'll celebrate it with church bells ringing and parades and pomp and illuminations, by which he meant fireworks. He knew back then we'd have fireworks, but he was wrong about the date. And in the popular imagination, it was the adoption of the Declaration 2 days later, which explained why the Congress had made the vote that it did, that became fixed in the popular mind as the true birthday of America. And it was celebrated immediately, read in public the 2 days later in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. read on July 9th to the troops by Washington, also in New York it was read out loud, where they tore down the statue of King George and melted it down and turned it into musket balls.
Well, you know, the truth is a number of people were actually given the assignment to craft the Declaration of Independence, weren't they?
That's right. Lee had actually proposed this resolution of independence back in June, and many of the members of Congress felt it was premature, so they did what all good Congresses do. They formed committees. And one of those committees was assigned to draft a declaration explaining why exactly they were going about this. That committee included initially John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Roger Sherman, and Livingston of New York. And Adams realized right away that they needed a Virginian for weight. Virginia was, without question, one of the two or three most important colonies.
Well, it was the first colony.
It was the first colony, but apart from that, it was in prestige, in wealth, in the number of great men that were there, and certainly in terms of fervor for independence, it was a leader. So Adams knew that they needed a Virginian. He knew Jefferson by reputation, really only by writing reputation.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, these guys weren't neighbors. I mean, they only came together, many of them, for a few hours at a time over a period of years. Stand by. Ken Davis is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. He's the author of Don't Know Much About History, but he actually does. And he's going to share some more of that with us as we continue through the rest of this hour. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Lassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a great visit with Kenneth Davis. Kenneth C. Davis is the name on the book. Don't know much about history. If you want to know the truth, folks, you want to know. Well, he identifies some of the myths because he can't reveal the truth without revealing the things that you and I may have come to believe about some of these things. If you want to have some fun and get educated, it'd be a great book to spend some time with your children with too, folks. I encourage you to find Ken's book. Don't know much about history. And any of his other books, wherever books are sold. Ken, I want to talk a little bit about the origins of all of this, this Declaration of Independence and the day that we celebrate. But before we do this, I want to come back to something we were saying just as the break, and we went to the break, and that is the fact that we kind of get the idea that all of these the founders and the framers. Which were many of them were the same people, but not all were the same people. These guys knew each other, but they weren't neighbors. They hadn't known each other for a long time. They didn't spend years and years together, and they often didn't like, even though they may have respected each other in their abilities and what they could bring to the table. They had this one great common cause that brought them all together, but otherwise, they often didn't even like each other.
No, they didn't like each other. They certainly didn't always agree, and there were a wide range of opinions and personalities, and that just reminds us again that these were human beings and with flaws and contradictions and egos and ambitions. But you're absolutely right. But the impression that a lot of people have is it's a sort of colonial era Kiwanis club that they got together once a month and had lunch and chatted and it was all very polite. No, Adams later writes very disparagingly of Benjamin Franklin and even Jefferson to some degree. They became very, very bitter political rivals at one point in their later careers, although they later became friends. Adams writes something about, well, when they write down the history of this revolution, somebody's going to say that, Franklin brought down electricity and out of that spark came George Washington. He was, very, very kind of dismissive and a little bit sour about it because I think he could see that his role in all of this was being diminished by people like Washington and Franklin, who were not ashamed of promoting themselves. There's self-promotion in a lot of this. And
well, this country doesn't happen without a healthy dose of ego, right?
That's absolutely true. But it was an extraordinary collection of personalities and people. And idealists in some respects, and we can be cynical because some of the things they did and practiced were very much at odds with some of the things they said. Obviously, slavery being chief among those, and you can't get past it.
Did you get the feeling though that some of these guys were slaveholders, but they weren't necessarily they were uncomfortable about it, and they didn't really know how to get unstuck from it?
They certainly were, and that's a.
Because I think you point out in your book that in some states it was illegal to emancipate slaves.
That's right. There were actually laws against doing it, and you know, there, Washington and Jefferson. Well, you can use those two as perhaps the prime examples. Both wrote and spoke about the fact that slavery was a clear contradiction to the principles that they were fighting for. Washington certainly did emancipate some of his own slaves in his will. Jefferson wanted to do the same, but he was in such a debt that he couldn't do it and depended on creditors to do it. He was a genius about it, just about everything but his finances. But you know, you go back to the time of this, and over in England, Samuel Johnson, the great Dr. Johnson, gets up in Parliament once and says, "How is it we hear the loudest yelps for liberty from the drivers of Negroes?" Jefferson and Washington believed that this was going to end, perhaps not in their lifetime, but soon. And about that, they were sadly, tragically mistaken. There were almost none of the signers of the Declaration had actually never owned slaves, very few of them, John Adams being one of them. He was opposed to slavery by every core.
Well, he was a New Englander, and there was not that much slavery in that part.
Well, that's actually not completely true. There was slavery in every colony in America right up till the time of the Revolution.
Would you not agree that it would be less likely for a New Englander than it would be for a Southerner to have been a slaveholder?
Among the average persons, yes, but certainly, and there were none of the big plantation-type slaves where one person had hundreds of slaves.
Right.
But household servants were very common, and of course, all of the shipping was done through the North. Boston at one time was, and Newport, Rhode Island, were two of the biggest slave transport areas, and that's why Jefferson, if you go back to the draft of the Declaration, writes one of his indictments of the King of England is that the king is responsible for the slave trade, which he calls the execrable commerce, and he also complains that the king is stopping America from doing anything about the slave trade. Well, this is deleted, and Jefferson later writes it's taken out in complacence or compliance with those southern gentlemen who owned slaves as well as the northern gentlemen who were making a great deal of money transporting them.
You describe how his Declaration of Independence was picked apart over a couple of days.
Yes.
And I actually have photocopies in a book that Walter Isaacson wrote about Benjamin Franklin. He actually has copies of Franklin's edits to Jefferson's work, and it's very interesting. We'll talk about that when we come back after these messages, folks. This is all about the building of the nation of the United States and how it got started and how we celebrate it and why we should be celebrating it this week. Tintail, stay with us. We'll be right back with Kenneth Davis.
To my love, took it down.
We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. The first one is where you can find the show and my newsletter and the blog. The second one is where you can find answers to your small business questions, smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Kenneth Davis is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Kenneth C. Davis is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Don't Know Much About History, Everything You Need to Know About American History But Never Learned. A lot of good stuff in here, folks. I encourage you to check it out. And buy two. You're going to want to keep one and give one away. Telling you off the air, and I think I may have mentioned it on the air, about Benjamin Franklin's edit that you know all about, and I actually have a photo here from Walter Isaacson's book about Benjamin Franklin, where Thomas Jefferson wrote, "We hold these truths." We all know this famous passage. "We hold these truths to be sacred and undeniable." That's what Jefferson wrote. And Franklin, apparently, is this true that he actually dropped by while Jefferson was writing this, and Jefferson said, "Would you take a look at this?" Is that how it happened? And
yeah,
anyway,
and
let me finish the quote, and then I'll let you come.
Sure.
And then Franklin edited sacred and undeniable to simply read, we hold these truths to be self-evident. Go ahead.
It's absolutely true. He was a member of the committee and one of the Jefferson's confidants in Philadelphia. They got along. They were like-minded in many ways about science. These were two of the men who embodied our ideas of the Enlightenment.
They were both good wordsmiths.
Good writers and interesting people. But imagine a conversation between the two of them. But we have the this is part of the impression that we grow up with as children, of course, that Jefferson sits down and these words just flow out of him. A lot of it was borrowed or changed from others. We were talking earlier off air about the notion of how important property was at this time in America, and Jefferson knew a phrase that was written by George Mason, another of the founders, a very important man, who had written about life, liberty, and the pursuit of property. Jefferson, of course, changes that very felicitously, I suppose, to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And, of course, by happiness, he's not just talking about, a warm puppy and having fun. Happiness as a philosophical idea.
Quiet enjoyment of your property. That kind of thing.
Yeah, and satisfaction that only comes through through being free and owning property. So these were philosophical ideas at the time, and they're important to remember because these men were not poor, struggling, oppressed people. They were people in America at that time, for the most part, on average, were some of the best fed and most comfortable and had the best standard of living in the world at that time. This was really a revolution of ideas in many ways. Certainly they were fighting for rights and certainly not paying certain taxes was part of it, but this was really about a very radical idea which we take for granted, that the government only exists through the consent of the governed, and that's perhaps the most important idea in the Declaration and one we often take for granted.
Well, a lot of the things that they fought for and that they developed, they were modeling off of earlier ideas that I trace back to Henry II in the 12th century, including the Bill of Rights of England, the Bail Act, the petition of rights, the Habeas Corpus Act, a number of others, including as you and I have talked about the Magna Carta. These were all predecessors to these documents they created, but the difference was these guys wanted it sans kings, didn't they?
They wanted without kings, and they also, what the problem was that those ideas which any Englishman would have enjoyed were not being extended to the colonies, and
right.
So a lot of the fundamental rights of an Englishman were not extended to the colonies, and that's really where the first sticking point begins.
But the idea of sans kings, that's what made these guys different, wasn't it?
It certainly was, and we should also point out, though, that many of them were loyal to the monarchy, and many of them were loyal to England, and they didn't want to break away. There were certainly people who wanted to find some accommodation.
Yeah.
John Dickinson, very significant man.
I apologize. We have to wrap it up. You know how these things go. We've just run out of time.
You know, I love to talk about this stuff.
Well, and you do it so well. That's the reason we like having you back. And by the way, Ken's got an article in the New York Times today. By the way, folks, Ken, thanks for being here. Good job. We'll see you next time.
Thanks.
I'm Jim Blassingame. See you in the next hour.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.